Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 21st. We'll begin today's reading on the front page. We're waiting for the spark of God. Empty Tomb co-founder calls for renewed vision as charitableness wanes, from Champaign. After many years of reporting the impacts of declining church giving, the Champaign Christian organization Empty Tomb and its leaders see the need for a divine spark to make a difference. Christians could do much now to help a hurting world if churches would provide the hope and vision they're lacking, according to Empty Tomb co-founder Sylvia Ronsvall. "We're waiting for the spark of God to get it going," she said. Sylvia and John Ronsvall and Empty Tomb recently released their 29th edition of the State of Church Giving Report, this one comparing giving for the years between 1968 and 2017. Downward trends have continued. In 1968, church members gave 3.02% of their income to their churches, according to the report. In 2017, that figure had declined to 2.13%. If that doesn't sound like much of a decline, it is a difference of billions of dollars. The largest share of the 2.13% of income people gave to churches in 2017 went to support congressional finances rather than to support outside charitable work. "The richer we get, the more isolated we get. Churches are in a good position to provide leadership and hope, but they have become cultural wallpaper. The church is a, if not the, significant social institution in the United States, but it has not been acting like it. Meanwhile, collective gross negligence has continued to foster 1 million preventable child deaths a year in dozens of countries. That's not to say people aren't acting charitably in their own communities. Empty Tomb harnesses Christian church members to help those in need, and Ronsvall said she needs many of these church members doing good for others. But she contended they're not reaching their full potential. What these local acts of charity say to her is that Christians will respond if they're given a vision. What the church has failed to do is the vision casting. The latest church giving report contended Hollywood is doing a better job than churches are in understanding the kind of vision and hope people need. The highest grossing movies in the U.S. as of mid-2019 have all been action-adventure stories with heroes taking on fierce opponents. People want meaning. They want hope, and Hollywood gets it. These top-grossing action-adventure movies are tapping into that excitement generated by the spark of eternity placed in the human heart by God. How then is it that the church, with the all-time true superhero, is seen as irrelevant and boring? It can only be concluded that the contemporary church is not living out its story in a way that connects with the spark of eternity in the human heart, as Hollywood seems to be doing so successfully. The Empty Tomb report also spotlighted declining church membership, and a Pew Research Center report released Thursday reinforced that. Telephone surveys done in 2018 and this year found that 65% of American adults called themselves Christians when asked about their religion, a decade decline of 12 percentage points. The percentage of those who don't claim a religious affiliation stands at 26%, up from 17% 10 years ago. If church was an exciting place that was helping people make sense of the world, people would flock there. But we don't understand our power. We are a sleeping giant. Also on the front page, back for a final bottoms up at CAMS. Shirts Big Business on Bar's final weekend, from Champaign. Campus Inc. co-founder Stephen Farag was working on his business's pop-up shop in the former CO Daniels midday on Friday, not normally a busy time for campus bars. But on normal days, a campus institution isn't closing down next door. As he peeked out windows of the old CO Daniels, which has acted as a storage space for CAMS after it closed a decade ago, he saw a line of people. "I started looking outside and there were just droves of people. All of us were scrambling. Thousands of people walked in and out of CAMS this weekend for the bar's final farewell before it's bulldozed and moved to the intersection of First and Green Streets. Farag took over C.O. Daniels, now an empty shell of its former self, knocked out the windows and strung up lights on the ceiling. Campus Inc. pre-sold 3,000 commemorative shirts to send around the country and then sold out of their 1,500 extra shirts by midday. That's when co-owner Tom Coleman began printing on the 1,500 blank shirts they had in storage. On Sunday, they were still printing, including a shirt Farag designed on Saturday. The 2014 Illinois graduate was at a tailgate outside Memorial Stadium when Illinois pulled off a shocking upset of number 6 Wisconsin. He rushed back to his store and sketched up a shirt that said, it's a Cam's miracle, along with the game's 24-23 scoreline. All of a sudden, we were like, oh my gosh, we might actually win. We were quickly texting and thinking, guys, Cam's is closing. Illinois is going to beat Wisconsin. We've got to do something. I got a text from my future brother-in-law who said, it's a Cam's miracle, and I was like, that's the shirt. Cindy Comikes swung by the bar on Sunday along with her husband Dean and her son Patrick, who grabbed a shirt. She hadn't been to the bar in 40 years, but she still remembered it fondly. We met a lot of people, elbow to elbow. Not the best smelling, but I just remember how fun it was, she said. On Sunday, the drove of people slowed down, and patrons no longer had to wait in line. That's when Eric Meyer, who owned Cam's for 27 years before selling it last year, dropped by. Meyer's history with the bar goes all the way back to the early 80s, when he worked at the bar as a college student. It was as busy as ever in the 80s. It was a great college bar. They're taking a lot of mementos out of the old place, including the bar top. I think they're very conscious of what this is all about, carrying on a great tradition. I'm looking forward to seeing the new store when it opens up. It's good. It'll kind of carry on that Cam's tradition. Cam's will move to a sparkly new location in 2020, but the old bar didn't necessarily need new amenities to thrive. Before heading over to his old bar to swig a few beers, Meyer said he understood the move, but Sunday was still a sad day for him. We didn't have to be the fanciest, nicest new place. I'll be honest, it was like a warehouse. But it wasn't about the decor. It was about being a regular old college bar where everybody could go. They could dress up. They could come in shorts and a t-shirt. They could dance on the dance stage. They could dance on the booth. You could have about anything in there and have fun. I used to tell our staff, guys, we sell fun. And from the sports page, looking forward, big win can't distract Illini from task of reaching bowl eligibility. I assume the celebration Saturday went late into the night, or early morning Sunday, and that's all good. When you knock off the number 6 team in the country like Illinois did at Memorial Stadium, you deserve a party. But after its win against Wisconsin, Illinois was the talk of college football. It was featured predominantly on ESPN Sports Center. Rivalry is accepted, as long as it doesn't distract from the bigger prize, a bowl bid. The shocking upset of the Badgers leaves Illinois just 3 victories short of a postseason berth, or maybe 2. There are 39 bowls looking for 2 teams each in 2019-2020. That means 78 schools are on their way somewhere. Might be an exotic spot like Hawaii or the Bahamas. Could be a big city like New York, Dallas, or Houston. Some stops are underrated, tourist destinations like Detroit and Boise, Idaho. It has been 5 years since Illinois last went to a bowl. It won't be picky. If you are wearing a bright colored blazer and want to extend an invite, the school will say yes, immediately. The Big Ten has ties to 9 bowls. It will gain an additional spot if a conference team lands a college football playoff berth. Currently undefeated Ohio State is in the best playoff position. The Buckeyes are a lock if they win their final 5 regular season games, followed by the Big Ten championship game. With 14 schools and the likelihood of 10 openings, every eligible team will have a bowl home. 4 Big Ten teams are already bowl eligible: Ohio State, Penn State, Minnesota, and Wisconsin. 3 others need one more win: Indiana, Iowa, and Michigan. Michigan State and Nebraska are too short. Maryland joins Illinois in the We Need 3 Wins Club. or do they? Earlier this decade, facing a shortage of eligible teams, the NCAA relaxed the rules to allow bowl teams with 5-7 records. In 2015, 5-7 Minnesota, Nebraska, and San Jose State earned bowl invites. All three won their bonus games. It happened again with Mississippi State and North Texas in 2016. Will any 5-7 teams be needed this time? Maybe. There are 23 schools already bowl eligible. Another 22 have 5 wins. So that makes 45 schools at or near the requirement, leaving 33 more open invitations. On Saturday, I laid out what it would take for Illinois to shock Wisconsin. Of course, I had no idea what was about to happen. In our staff picks, I went with Wisconsin, like everyone else. If we had included the point spread, I would have taken Illinois. 31 points is way too many to give a home team. Despite the win against Wisconsin, Illinois is an 8-point underdog at Purdue. That makes sense. The Boilermakers are playing better in recent weeks. Their last game at home on October 12th, the Boilermakers drilled Maryland 40-14. Jeff Brohm will have his guys ready Saturday. They won't be impressed by Illinois' updated status. The game in West Lafayette is one of the 5 left for the Illini. After that, they host Rutgers, travel to Michigan State and Iowa, and host Northwestern. The Illini likely to need to win 3 of their last 5 to extend their season. It's a goal the players talk about openly during the summer. It would mean another step in Lovie Smith's rebuild. The project is a bit behind schedule. Maybe the Wisconsin win put it back on track. My hunch, Illinois will be favored, perhaps by a big number, when it hosts Rutgers. It will also be favored at home in the finale against Northwestern, which is having a rare down year under Pat Fitzgerald. Wins at either Michigan State or Iowa will require a performance similar to the one against Wisconsin. Force a few turnovers, take care of the ball, stay close, and make a big play or two at the end. 3 wins in 5 games will not be easy, but it is possible. Didn't I think I would be writing that this season? Until about 2:30 p.m. Saturday, when the party started. Pep in their steps, culture of excellence drives the marching Illini. Eddie Almenord hoisted herself off the dewy turf on the Memorial Stadium field just after 7 a.m. 2 Saturdays ago, climbed to the top of the ladder at the 50-yard line, and looked out toward the marching Illini in their orange and blue parkas. "Good morning, band," the Champaign Central graduate shouted into a microphone headset, elongating her words for emphasis. "It's game day." Turn to the person next to you and say, "It's game day." It's the first chilly game day of the year, the kind of weather that dampens the brass instruments the band members are holding. But one of the crucial jobs of drum majors, Alamord, Jane Fulliard, and Jake Burrows, is to fire up the band members so they can do the same for the crowd in a few hours. That means on mornings when the weather dips into the 40s, and during games when the Illini are trailing by multiple touchdowns, as they would in a few hours, they have to keep an ever-enthusiastic attitude. The minute that we're on the field, we make sure that everybody feels welcomed, included, and making sure that they all have fun. Even when we're stretching, we like to slip in a funny joke and all of the time have constant energy. Just really positive, hyped energy. During a football season in which plenty of seats at Memorial Stadium have remained empty, the band's role, first and foremost, is to entertain. But it also keeps its roots as a military band, with regimented military-like exercises. Practices and performances are equal parts goofy and stone-faced serious. They're locked in step in straight lines, performing complex maneuvers, but they're light-hearted. During their march to the stadium a few hours after their warm-up, a crowd lines the street from the armory to the stadium. The drum majors lead the band's 375 members on a lockstep walk toward the stadium, with serious blank expressions on their face. Their stoicism never breaks. They sing Pride of the Illini, a song about marching for the men who are fighting for you, and play other military marches and never crack a smile. But when the drum line plays its cadence, the band, along with members of the Illiniettes, but not the drum majors, begins to chant. And it has nothing to do with school pride or marching for soldiers. It's pure fun. The centerpieces to the cadence chant this year include Low, a song about dancing in the club, the Black Eyed Peas hit My Humps, and several inside jokes. They also stop in the middle of the street for coordinated dance breaks. The verbal execution that the band gives during the cadence that changes and alters even throughout the year sometimes, it's something unique that has happened. Usually that finds its way into the drumline's cadence. My biggest thing that I'll do with the drumline cadence and the verbals that go along with that is to make sure that we police that and things are very family-friendly along the way. The amount of information the band has to absorb quickly each week is immense. There's a new show at every home game, meaning the band needs to learn new music and new formations at the beginning of the week. At times, Hauser is tough on his band as he stands in the 60-foot tower or in the stands at Memorial Stadium on Thursday nights and Saturday mornings. He points out flaws in musicianship, admonishes them when enthusiasm is lacking, and makes sure lines are as straight as can be. But he makes sure to work in lighthearted moments. At the end of practices, he asks if it's anyone's birthday, to which sections will chant back names. He jokes about the opposing team and upholds fun traditions. They know we have a job to do, but they know we get to have fun along the way. That's very important on the collegiate level, to find those moments to have fun. If we're not having fun, we're not going to have students coming back from year to year. They keep coming back no matter the football team's record. Almost 700 students auditioned for the band of 375, which returned 250 members. That meant over 400 students auditioned for around 125 spots. Those 375 students, most of whom aren't music majors, spend most of their entire Saturdays with each other. For each 11 a.m. kickoff, they perform constantly starting at 10:10 when they play Alma Mater for fans at the Armory. Then they march to the stadium where they play their pregame show within minutes of arriving. Their halftime show is the centerpiece of their week, but throughout the game they provide the entertainment and atmosphere that's embedded in college football. During the third quarter, a small portion of the band goes to the Colonnades Club to perform, and then to the East Stands where they perform for fans who are taking a break from the game to get concessions. After the game, they march back to the College of Education building and perform for a large group of fans. Like most college marching bands, the Marching Illini don't perform in competition, so the stage doesn't get bigger than game day. And when Saturday comes, they're ready to entertain, whether that means putting themselves in the exact spot to execute a formation, firing up the crowd with fight songs and popular music, or chanting the words to a pop music song while marching stoically in line. I think we start from the very beginning of our band season in building this culture of excellence, and we have fun in working towards that excellence and working towards being great. We as a band do a good job of being able to goof around on the field and having fun and telling jokes, and when it's time to do a rep, we're set, and we know we're putting in time toward a good product that we want to put out on the field all together. $60,000 in wishes granted. On the way for elementary schools in Urbana, a dozen new ukuleles, tap dance shoes for fifth graders at four schools, three portable greenhouses, and two bird feeders. Meanwhile, in Champaign, 170 middle school students will get to experience the culture of 1920s Harlem, 67 fifth graders will take in a musical in Chicago, and every classroom at Westview Elementary will be provided materials to build their very own calming corner. And those are just a few of the $60,000 worth of goodies CU public school teachers and students will be treated to. It all comes courtesy of the Champaign-Urbana Schools Foundation's annual grants program, which this year will fund 81 projects affecting 14,000 students at 27 schools. It's heavy on STEAM, fine arts, class trips, new reading materials, crayon art, and the sort of innovations that may make Grandma and Grandpa do a double take, from an additional robot to help more Bottenfield Elementary students work on coding to the LED stock market ticker panel that's on the way at Urbana High's Business and Personal Finance Lab. Back to the sports page, more in store. PK sends Sabres into next round from Champaign. Plenty of potential hero candidates for St. Thomas More's boys soccer exist on a match-by-match basis. J.P. Hoffman, the senior captain who kept the Sabres afloat throughout 2019 as injuries plagued the program. Joe Sellett, the offensive dynamo who is the centerpiece of various STM attacks. Emery Roulon, the goalkeeper with double-digit shutouts on the year, or any of the six other healthy seniors, many of whom play on the defensive back line. Yet the Sabres debuted a sleeper pick in Friday evening's Class 1A STM Regional Final versus Judah Christian when Coach James Johnson thrust sophomore Blake Stabb into the net after 100 minutes of soccer. Stabb's mission, stop as many tried penalty kicks as possible with the season on the line. The outcome, Stabb being hoisted in the air by his teammates about 15 minutes later. Stabb laid out to save two attempts while the top-seeded Sabres converted four of their five chances, sending off fifth-seeded Judah 4-3 in PKs following scoreless regulation and overtime stretches. It was a huge surprise that Stabb, who briefly entered the match earlier in the afternoon as a field substitute. Johnson said, just make sure to keep goalie in the back of your mind just in case. So when the PKs were starting to happen, I got a little nervous. Hoffman admitted that feeling wasn't limited solely to Stabb, who more often plays as an outside back on defense for STM. A guy's just stepping up, taking his role. We know in practice we see him saving them, and he showed up whenever he needed to. Johnson's choice came after Roulon held the Tribe off the board in four periods of action. So why turn to Stabb? He's a baseball player. He's got quick hands, Johnson said of Stabb, the son of Champaign Central baseball coach John Stabb. We just felt like his ability to get low, just like scooping up grounders in baseball, was important, and luckily for us, it paid off. Stabb's moment to shine arrived in part because Judah effectively executed its bunkering strategy throughout the match, described as such by Tribe coach Josh Berkey. STM outshot Judah 14-2 prior to PKs, but the Tribe refused to break. This even after three-year defensive starter Isaac Noteboom left with a first-half injury and never returned. Caleb Aldridge, typically a key offensive facilitator, returned in a sweeper role he occupied during Wednesday's semifinal victory over Uni High. He, Caleb Crowley, Evan Payan, Isaac Brown, and netminder Tyler Grenda formed a potential enough unit to stump the Sabres shooters. We look back at our stats in over 160 minutes when we've used Aldridge in the back, we haven't been scored on. I sent my coaches a rope-a-dope video of Muhammad Ali and said, can we get to round eight and get a punch in at the end? Judah wound up landing a few blows once PKs commenced. Aldridge, Grenda, and Joe Linsner all tallied in the Tribe's first three tries against Stabb. They were matched by Sellett, Lucas Palomar, and Tyler Crawford across STM's first three bids versus Grenda. Then Stabb recorded his first big stop by lunging left on Bobby Rodriguez, the same athlete who finished Wednesday's PK triumph over Uni High with a make. I started to gain a little bit more confidence in myself, Stabb said. He needed it once Grenda turned his own block on George Comet in the Sabres' next attempt. This time, Stabb flung himself right on Nathan Karari's shot to leave the final score in the hands of STM's last kicker, Hoffman. A high, hard boot to Grenda's right sealed the deal. That was one of the best feelings, man. It was just that feeling where you know that you didn't let your team down. I was the leader that I needed to be, and it felt good. As the Sabres senior heavy group moves on, The tribe says goodbye to seven upperclassmen, many of whom held a significant role in Judah's first-ever sectional final appearance last season. They're the best senior class as a group, I think, we've ever had at the school in 20 years, Berkey said. That's the saddest thing for me is I don't get to be around these guys next year. Johnson gets to spend at least a few more days with his own boys as they ready for Tuesday's 1A normal U-High sectional semifinal against either Bloomington Cornerstone or Monticello. Now a five-time regional champion as the STM's boys' leader, he believes his crew is not going to be happy with anything less than playing for a sectional title. And that's not all. Since freshman year, all we've had on our mind is state senior year. That's been our ultimate goal, and to get this regional done, it means the world. And from Tom's mailbag, Urbana sold the lot at 200 South Vine Street, which was estimated to be valued at nearly $1 million, to Chris Saunders of Green Street Realty for $1. The projected timeline was that work would begin in April 2019 and be ready for occupancy by August 2020. What's the latest timeline for completion? Green Street Realty's townhome project at 200 South Vine in downtown Urbana is proceeding as planned and designed. Construction is expected to be completed prior to December 31, 2020, as required by the redevelopment agreement, said Brandon Boyce, Urbana's economic development manager. Environmental abatement, demolition, and initial site prep work has been completed. Some utility work and further site prep are expected to occur this fall. City staff is currently reviewing building plans, and the developer expects construction to start in the spring of 2020 as soon as weather permits. Is there any plans to build a Taco Bell in Mahomet? Nothing yet, said Village Administrator Patrick Brown. We hear a lot of feedback from residents who would love to have a Taco Bell. We are not aware of any plans, but our door is always open and welcoming. With two interstate exits and more than 15,000 area residents, we think we would be a great market location. Georg Gopliski is such an intriguing young man. He knows four languages and gives articulate and thoughtful interviews. I know he came into college undeclared, but has he landed on a major to study at the U of I yet? Gopliski is still undeclared regarding his major, said U of I Athletic Department spokesman Kent Brown. U of I students don't have to declare a major until the end of their sophomore year. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 21st. Please stay tuned.